Channel 2.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker show here on Channel Radio in association with Biz Radio. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the stonkingly gorgeous Jules Sirkin. And we're going to be talking to our second guest of the day fairly shortly, Mr. Simon Hammond of Morpheus Insurance.
Not an organ in sight.
See, I just see what you did there. Which just as well, really.
I still love a hand.
In a small studio like this, having an organ hanging around isn't going to be good, is it?
Lovely, it'd be lovely. Sorry, I'm talking a bit funny. I've got
You've got your mouth full of sweets, haven't you?
No, I've got these my homeopathic remedies, and you have to have them under your tongue.
I don't know how you transport all of this stuff everywhere.
She's got
bags and bags and bags of stuff. She's like a witch. She's got sprays and potions and infusions.
My own tea.
Right. She brings her own tea bags, her own coffee, coconut milk. Well, she doesn't bring her own coffee. She leaves it on the roof of the car. But it's amazing, Simon. She comes out for an hour and she's got like bags of everything. She's a witch.
I've always got everything I need. It's called discipline. Because last night I got very delayed. I have to take these three times a day, and I got very delayed because there's a way of taking them. You have to have them 15 minutes away from anything else. And it's very rarely that 15 minutes of something is not going in my mouth because,
I know, we've been sitting there watching you.
The old biscuit, the plantain.
Yeah. Haven't we, Simon? your plantain crisps, ginger nuts.
It's all been happening.
It has, hasn't it?
Travelling apothecary.
So last night, because I was in London, I was a bit delayed taking them, and then the new husband and I watched Michael Palin Round the World in 80 Days. Highly recommend it. Fabulous. I love Michael Palin. I could watch him all day and night and listen to him. So I got behind. So I was sitting up in bed at 11 o'clock at night taking them because I've got so many to take. And the new husband was getting very grumpy because he had an early morning call.
Yeah.
You know, it's very hard to fit in all my life star things.
I worked with Michael Palin's son for a little while.
Did you?
Yeah, Will Palin. We were working on a project to restore the dockyard in Sheerness.
What was he then? Was he an architect?
He's a conservationist, yeah.
Would love to meet. I bet he's lovely because Michael Palin.
It's very
have
nice.
Have you watched it, Simon? Michael Palin,
yes.
Round the World.
Yeah. Mm.
He is just, he's just so, of course, Monty Python, he's incredibly witty, but it's just so watchable. It's lovely.
Monday the 14th of February. That will be next Monday, won't it?
That's isn't that Valentine's Day, isn't it?
It certainly is, yeah. Well remembered.
Yeah.
November the 14th. November.
In fact,
Monday the 14th of February.
In fact, I've got some duck legs coming.
Have you?
To cook.
Is that relevant to anything at all?
Valentine's Day. I'm going to cook my new husband duck legs.
You spoiled the surprise now.
He won't listen.
Yeah. Monday the 14th of February, there's an intensive 90-day business book writing program with the Rite of Passage VIP Academy. This program will take you from initial idea through to published author. You'll receive bi-weekly progress and target-setting meetings, a full critique of the first 2,000 words, a full edit of your final manuscript, a publishing contract with Mabel and Stanley Publishers, membership of an exclusive writing community for feedback, Q&A sessions and guest speakers from the writing, publishing and marketing worlds. There are only 3 places available on this program. Groups are deliberately small so they receive the best value and individual support. To apply, just send a direct message on Twitter to Karen Stanley Author, that's her Twitter handle, before the 11th of February, or you can fill out a contact form on her website, which is www.karenstanley-author.co.uk. What a fantastic thing.
Is that me?
What?
Was that me, that noise?
It was, actually.
Oh, sorry about that.
There was a bit of a squeak. I don't know what you did there.
It's that mouse I've also got.
Yeah, you just crushed a mouse, didn't you? So that fantastic writing program, if you fancy being an author.
Karen Stanley, isn't it?
Yeah.
She's great. So, but that's February the 14th she's doing that.
Yeah, I don't know if you know this, it's duck leg day.
Yeah, it's duck leg day.
It's duck leg day.
Any recipes, because I do like an old-fashioned duck cooked just with the cherry sauce.
An old-fashioned what?
Duck.
Oh, duck.
Just with the cherry sauce. Do you see what he did there, Simon?
Yeah.
Black cherries.
Yeah, black cherries.
Cherries,
I don't mind what colour, but red.
Oh, black cherries
red
are best. With duck, it's black cherry.
A little bit of port, maybe, in there.
Possibly.
Port,
yeah, possibly.
But I do like a duck leg, and I thought it would be, and it's organic.
Is it confit? Confit a duck leg.
Confit, oui. Mais oui.
Okay. Best business events. Are you great at what you do? Are you a standout small business that has achieved constant growth? You could be a winner too of the Small Business Awards Kent, Maidstone, Tunbridge Wells, Canterbury and Ashford. Easy and quick to apply. You can go to kentbusinessradio.co.uk /best business or hit the business tab at the top and you can find out all the details about those four awards for this year. But you know what?
Should we talk to someone?
I think we should talk to someone sensible.
He's been so patient.
And he's sat here.
One of the least... you don't have to do much for him, do you? Just a little glass of water.
Yeah.
No tea, no coffee, no plantain crisps.
He's sat here listening to your nonsense for an hour.
And yours.
No, I've been fine.
Yeah.
I feel like an audience of one.
Shell-shocked. Yeah. Are you ever going to stop talking at me? Simon, it's a pleasure to welcome you back onto the show. We haven't seen you for a long, long time, and that's remiss of us, and it's always good to have you on. So thank you for coming on the show. Why don't we kick off by you just telling the listeners a little bit about Simon and Morpheus Insurance, what it is you actually do.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. It's great to be back. I think it was all done virtually last time, wasn't it?
Last year, whenever it was.
So, yeah, it's good to be back. Thanks. We're commercial insurance brokers. We do have a private client arm as well, but we're primarily commercial. 20 years last month, man.
Really?
Boy.
Yeah. Wow.
Sole trader, no staff. Right. Went limited, rebranded, took on staff, normal journey.
Right, okay.
And here we are today.
And how many people have you got now, Simon?
There's four.
Right,
so,
okay.
But we're growing very nice. We've been growing each year for about the last 5 years, so
fantastic.
It could well be five or six soon. But we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. But yeah, we specialise in various areas. Firstly, construction. So literally anything to do with construction insurance, self-employed chippy, multi-million turnover construction company, anywhere in between.
Right.
Loads of property insurance, landlord insurance, commercial, resi, unoccupied, portfolios, etc.
Right.
Financial lines, which is good.
Sorry to interrupt. Does that include buy-to-let?
Quite a lot there going on, wasn't
there?
I'm just scratching the surface.
You know what you're doing, but it's quite a lot to take in.
Yeah, but I'm asking questions here. Because does that cover buy-to-let insurance?
Yeah, single buy-to-let property. Could be just a little three-bed semi, or somebody might have five properties, or larger portfolio.
Okay, because that's something that people don't always think about, isn't it? You know, they rent out a property to someone, just a one-off, and they don't really think through the insurance properly.
Well, you do find that when people might have moved out of their property and rented it out, that they still think they're covered under their household insurance.
Yeah, exactly.
Which they're not.
Yeah.
So, they should take out landlord's insurance.
Yeah. Cool. So another good piece of advice there, because there's a lot of people that do that. You're absolutely right. Sorry, I interrupted you. You were telling us about what you do.
Jump in any time. So we also specialise in financial lines. That sounds quite posh, but really what that is professional indemnity, directors and officers liability, and funky things like personal guarantee insurance if directors have to put up PGs for a bit of finance for their company.
Right.
Or warranty and indemnity insurance, which is great fun. So that's insurance for mergers and acquisitions.
Okay.
Could be small transactions, could be large transactions.
So how does that work?
So basically, if somebody's buying another company, it's insurance against any inaccurate misrepresentations.
Such as? Give us a clue.
So say they buy a company 5 years down the line, the skeletons come out of the closet, they've been in breach of health and safety maybe, something like that. Or anywhere where, unbeknown to the buyer, the seller may have acted fraudulently and it's resulted in a reduction of the value of the company they bought, you can take out warranty and indemnity insurance at transaction stage, and it avoids the need of going through a very expensive and lengthy litigation process.
Yeah, quite often if someone hasn't got any money.
Well, which largely don't go anywhere anyhow. Yeah. So there's an insurance for that.
Okay. Is that a line of business that you do quite a lot of, or is it very, very specialised?
We are getting more and more inquiries for it. Now, there's obviously COVID activities ramped up, people wanting to sell their businesses.
Well, there's a lot of businesses on the market, yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, and of course, I think COVID is probably a good point of that as well, you know, because you don't know... we've seen things in the press just recently from the government about writing off debts and people that fraudulently claimed furlough money and stuff like that. So I guess you've bought a fire sale company that went down due to COVID. You're absolutely right. You don't know that somebody might pop up eventually and go, excuse me a minute, you need to repay £200,000 in misclaimed furlough payments
absolutely.
Or something.
Obviously, you know, the buyer still has to carry out all necessary due diligence. It has to be underwritten. Mm. But, yeah, it would be things like that.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, fascinating. Cool. So it's a whole range of business insurance. Jules has got an email that I want her to read at some point about, did you read it already about e-bikes?
No, I haven't read that yet.
Okay. At some point, I want you to read that while we're talking to Simon, because I've got some questions around that I'm going to ask Simon. Okay. What I'd like you to do now, Simon, is just go through the insurance requirements of a small business, an average kind of small business. What are the things that a business needs to think about right from day one? What are the basics of business insurance?
Cool, you put me on the spot there.
Thanks
for that.
Yeah, that's all right.
Right, so basically, if you're employing anyone, or even if a friend of yours is helping you out on a casual basis, it's a statutory requirement to have employer's liability insurance. So right. that's the first and foremost one that you've got to take out. Mm. And it is normally allied to public and products liability. Public liability is if you're out visiting somebody's premises and you trip someone up and they hurt their ankle, or you knock something over and you break it. That's public liability. Products liability, this is useful for e-commerce type businesses. If they sell or supply goods that are faulty and cause injury or damage, then that would be covered under products liability. So they're your liabilities, the first thing you've got to consider. Then you need to look at cover for stock and contents, obviously. And then if you've got a bricks and mortar based business, you would also should really consider business interruption insurance. So worst case scenario, the place burns down to the ground. It covers you for the loss of profits you would have made, wages that you still have to pay to staff, any on costs on the premises that you still have to pay, such as rent and rates, and the cost of hiring temporary alternative premises and kitting it out with computers and shelving and desks and chairs. And stuff.
I'm smiling while you were saying that because
I mentioned business interruption.
A couple of years ago, I was signing the lease on a building, and my lawyers were taking an eternity to do it, and I'm thinking, it's not a big deal, this. It really is a fairly straightforward lease. What's going on? And I rang them and I said, you know, why are we getting problems with this? And they said, it's the other side. We're arguing over terrorism insurance. Oh. And I go, what? And they said, yeah, you know, the thing is, if somebody blew the building up while you were in it, You would lose everything. And I went, yeah, because I'd be dead. And they went, well, yeah. And I went, so I don't care. But, you know, so there can be some things that are a bit obscure.
Terrorism insurance is actually relatively low value cost. It's not expensive at all. So.
Yeah, just bung it in there.
Yeah, chuck it in.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Cool. Okay, sorry, my microphone suddenly decided to up itself.
Do you want
there,
me to read that tweet about electric
yes,
bikes?
Yes, please, if you would.
And then Simon can listen. So a leading manufacturer of electric bikes in the county, so that's Kent, I guess, have unveiled their latest range, pedal cycles with a full throttle. It means users can be fully propelled by the motor rather than having to pedal to get an extra boost. Whisper Bikes, that's W, like the chocolate bar, in Kemsing, Sevenoaks, has established itself as one of the top e-bike providers and hopes its limited run of full throttle bikes on three of its most popular models will prove a hit. Users will be able to propel the bike up to 15.5 miles per hour without any leg power. That's a motorbike, then.
Exactly.
The firm has had the bikes tested by the Driver and Vehicle Standard Agency, the DVSA, and had them approved, as low-powered mopeds, which means they can be ridden legally on roads and private land.
Yeah.
There, Simon.
But my point, and what I'm going to ask Simon in a minute, is that they're still classified as bicycles. Yeah, low-powered mopeds.
Yeah.
So you don't need a licence. You don't need all the normal things if it was a motorbike or a moped. You can just drive them on the road.
Any road sense.
Yeah. So what I wanted, I'm thinking about that myself, 15 miles an hour is quite a lick. Mm. And if you drove into someone, you could do a bit of damage at that level.
And if they're classed as bicycles, you won't have to take out compulsory insurance under the Road Traffic Act.
So, exactly.
Yeah, you're reliant on them actually having done the sensible thing and taken out a bit of insurance.
Yeah. So, you know, and that was really what my question to you was, Simon. Are you aware? I mean, I'm sure there probably isn't yet because it's so new. But for me, I would start thinking about if I was using one, the first thing I'd think about is insuring myself.
Yeah, I mean, it is so new that the insurance industry is very much catching up with it. But there are one or two providers out there. I think you just go and Google. I mean, it's not something that we offer, but there are providers out there who can help. Because the most important thing, really, is not so much the bike itself.
Yeah.
It's for any injury that they might cause to somebody else.
Exactly, yeah. You know, you're right, you know, because the bikes are, well, I don't know how much they cost, hundreds of pounds.
Over 1,000.
But at 15 miles an hour, especially if you're riding it on a pavement or something, you could do some serious damage to someone.
Compensation for injury would be far greater than £1,000.
Yeah, exactly. So if you're thinking of getting one, personally, I'd recommend thinking about getting insurance to go with it. Mm. What are you taking now?
This is my thyroid homeopathy.
Oh, for God's sake.
It goes on forever.
It's like working with a chemist shop. It really is. Yeah. Okay, anyway, back to Mr. Sensible, Simon. So there's some statutory businesses insurance that we need. There's some sensible business insurances that we need. I was talking to you off air about something I'm going to do. I'm about to sign a lease on a new building and the landlord.
Oh, where is it?
No, it's the same one I'm in.
Oh,
it's just it's just a new lease.
I went by the other day. The coffee looks amazing. They've got nice cakes and things now.
Yeah, didn't you go in and buy something?
No, I was rushing to acupuncture, but I'm going again tomorrow.
Yeah. I tell you what, if you want a sausage sandwich or bacon sandwich for lunch, we do very posh bacon and sausage sandwiches.
I want one on
toasted sourdough.
Very Canterbury.
Yeah. Anyway, I forgot what I was going to say now. We're looking at negotiating a new lease, and for the first time, they're making us responsible for the building maintenance and repairs itself. So, again, is that something that we should look to insurance to help us with?
Yeah, I mean, if you've got a full insuring and repairing lease, it's your responsibility to raise the insurance. I mean, that could be a double-edged sword. It could be a building that maybe isn't in the best of condition.
Yeah, yeah.
But equally, though, if you're arranging your own insurance on it, then at least you have control over your costs rather than the landlord arranging it and you just getting the bill each year.
Sure. This might be another putting Simon on the spot kind of question, which I'm good at. But that kind of insurance, I mean, what kind of thing would it actually cover on I know this is an open-ended question and you may not have a direct answer to this, but what kind of things may it cover and what kind of things might it definitely not cover, if you see what I mean?
Yeah, so obviously it will cover the structure of the building itself if there's a fire or whatever, so rebuild cost.
Yeah.
It will cover property owner's liability, so if somebody trips over a loose step, that sort of thing, it would pay compensation for their injuries. If you've got a lift there, you can include engineering insurance.
Right.
Any lifting equipment will have to be inspected, again, statutory requirements.
Right.
And also rent that you may still have to pay even though you have to move out of the building for whatever reason.
Okay. But, I mean, I'm thinking, you know, if a window frame fell out, I can't just go and claim on my insurance for a new window.
No, if it just fell out, no. But if it hurt somebody when it fell out, then
then you could, okay. But that's an important distinction, isn't it? Because, you know, when you take, you know, because we have quite a few insurances for different things and some things do cover everyday events.
Exactly. I mean, if the window falling out can be attributed to high winds a couple of days beforehand, then absolutely.
Right, yeah. If it just fell out because it was rotten.
Well, yeah.
Damn.
Bit of a grey area, that one.
Yeah, damn. My windows are well flaky. okay, that's really interesting. You know, because without being rude, you know, a lot of people think, oh, insurance is boring. But
essential.
It is essential, and it's as an angel investor, which I was for quite a while. I'm not doing so much now.
You stopped being angelic.
Yeah, no, because I ran out of money basically. But one of the first things I said to all businesses is get yourself insured properly, right up front, because a lot of people put it off. They go, well, it's a cost. I don't know. No, it's a cost. I don't need it now.
It's a really interesting point you've just made there, because it's taken years for us to build up a really, really good quality network of law firms, accountancy practices, etc., etc. And we do get referred over their clients who can be private equity-backed tech companies.
Yep.
And the private equity backers will always say, right, you've got to have directors and officers liability.
Yep.
So that's the first thing that they come to us for. But then equally, a number of times, these are limited companies and they haven't got any employer's liability insurance. Yeah, and that's the basic requirement as well. So we quite like those ones because they need a hand.
Yeah. Yeah, and it is important, and people just do try and kick it into the long grass. You know, they go, oh, I can't afford it at the moment. You know, you can't afford the alternative either.
No, exactly. I get quite passionate about startups because I was one, 20 years ago, as I said.
Yeah.
So, you know, back then, I didn't have Google. I had Yellow Pages. And so I had to find my suppliers and service providers from Yellow Pages. Of course, you don't know who you're dealing with or anything.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, you've got a choice. You can either, three decisions. You can either put your head in the sand, you can go on Google and try and sort it out yourself, or good luck with that, or you just speak to a broker who actually gets what you're trying to achieve and actually will actually help you rather than just get one quote and it's too expensive.
Yeah, without blowing smoke, I think that is one of the massive benefits of dealing with a brokerage such as yourself. You know, we get used to doing things like buying car insurance through, you know, Google.
Sure.
Yeah, where we just Google it and we get the cheapest option and we go, I want fully comprehensive on my 1984 Toyota or whatever, and they'll go, it's £200. But most other insurances are a bit more complicated than that in terms of getting the right cover. And I don't think people always kind of think this through. I mean, the classic, just in domestic insurance, is building insurance itself.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, people go, "Oh, I paid £600,000 for my house, so I'll insure it for £600,000."
Exactly.
And you go, "Well, you're insuring to have it rebuilt, yeah? How much is it going to cost to rebuild it, not what you paid for it?"
Absolutely right.
Yeah.
Absolutely right. There is this misconception that the best deals are on Google, so that's people's default position.
Mm.
9 times out of 10, most insurance brokers are just as competitive.
Yeah.
And people think if they go to a third party as such or an agent that it's going to be more money, but those days are long gone.
And also, it's not just the price comparison, I believe. In going to a broker, you're going to get something tailored to what you actually want and need. You know, because one of the funny things about insurance, touch wood, is that we buy it and never use it, if you see what I mean.
Yeah. You don't want to use it, do you?
Yeah. So you could sit there. I mean, the classic is what you just said about buy-to-let. You know, somebody's got normal household insurance. They rent their house out. They don't think about it.
No.
Something happens, and then they go to claim, and the insurance company goes, well, you're not covered.
No, exactly.
Yeah. And you know, that's one of the problems. You buy insurance, you think, right, I've got insurance on that, but have you? You know, is it right? Does it suit your circumstances? Have you configured it correctly? And does it fulfil the criteria that you think it should fulfil? And I think, you know, that in itself is worth going to a broker. Even if you did pay a little more money for it, the fact is it's worth it.
Well, exactly. Plus you've got somebody fighting your corner when you do have a claim that's a bit...
50. Is that something that you do as well? That
it's how we earn our money. It's exactly what we do.
Yeah. Okay. Because that can be a big thing as well. I mean, I have to say, I don't make many insurance claims. They're normally with cars more than anything else.
I've heard.
I have a tendency to wrap my cars around trees these days. But I have to be honest. The last claim I made on a vehicle was a no-brainer. They just paid straight away. But then there was nobody else involved. It was just me being an idiot. okay. So I want to just kind of move on and talk to you a little bit, because we were chatting about this off air, about more exotic things that you do. Because I know you like a bit of a challenge with insurance, putting things together for people. So give us a view, without, you know, naming names or talking about anybody in particular, the kind of insurances that you enjoy kind of really working on, that are, you know, maybe a bit different to what most of us are experiencing.
So the funny thing is, it would be enjoyable to me, but it probably won't be enjoyable.
We go, oh, boy, exactly. What a boring fight is. Yeah.
Well, we got involved end of last year with a group of companies One of which was a special purpose acquisition company, a SPAC.
SPAC, I know.
So a SPAC is a shell company that lists on a junior stock exchange, and its sole purpose is to buy another target company. They buy the other target company, and then what happens is that target company becomes the subsidiary of the SPAC. And then there's what's called a reverse takeover. So the subsidiary, the target company that's been bought, buys the SPAC, and then the company that's been bought all of a sudden now has a listing on the stock exchange. So it avoids the lengthy and costly IPO process. And SPACs came very much to the fore during lockdown, obviously, because it was very difficult to run IPOs. So we were asked to get involved in directors and officers liability for a SPAC. The company also happened to be registered in the British Virgin Islands.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so that threw another spanner in the works. And by an awful lot of work, we managed to get it placed, funnily enough, with the same insurance company of the main parent company. So, we got there in the end, but it was worthwhile, and a very happy client. It was going to cause them issues under FCA regulations otherwise.
Right. So, you know, I don't think people always appreciate how this works. You know, I think they assume they come to a broker like you, you've got a list of suppliers, and you ring them up and go, right, how much is it? Right, we'll insure it with you.
Yeah, sure.
It doesn't really work like that, does it?
No, it's like anything. Your service providers are just as important as your customers. So you've got to have good quality, long-standing relationships with them. And we've been, you know, over the years where we've built up these relationships, we have had claims, one of which I'll never forget wasn't covered, that we managed to get paid.
Really?
And that was on the strength of the relationship with the insurance company.
Right.
So it takes years to build up, and then you do get this flexibility. And also, one of the things I would love to say to everyone is, if you've got your own business insurance, please don't switch every year. It's a false economy. If you've built up a bit of loyalty with an insurance company for a few years, that will definitely stand you in good stead if something goes wrong.
Yeah. Because, again, this is part of the whole, without knocking them, but the whole money supermarket thing, isn't it? That we've got into this habit with things like car insurance and home content insurance, where every year you get a renewal that's 400 quid dearer than it was the year before.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and you go, hold on a minute, I'm not paying that. If, you know, they're advertising it half the price if I'm a new customer.
Well, that's very much under the FCA's radar now. It's called price walking.
Yeah.
So us brokers are having to jump through a few more hoops than we used to. There were quite a few already, but jumping through a few more just to avoid that situation.
Right. Yeah. But what it leads to is people now, as a regular thing, I know loads of people that don't even look at their renewals. They go every year, they go and change their insurance company.
Yeah.
Because on the grounds that it must be cheaper. Mm.
When I did that, I went to, from my insurer, I can't remember who they are now, but I went to Saga, and they beat it by God knows how many. And then when I went back and told my insurer why I wasn't going to renew because Saga were cheaper, they matched it.
Oh, mine just told me to clear off.
Did they?
Yeah.
Well, now that's that situation should go, because when it comes up for renewal, they're duty bound to provide the same price as though you're a new customer.
Really? Yeah. Well, that's good.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Because we should. Yeah. It's ridiculous, isn't it? That sort of thing. There's no loyalty.
Yeah.
Well, they bought business in when you moved over to them, and then they did ramp up the premium at renewal, knowing that they'll lose a few, but they'll keep a few at the same time, and that's really where they were making their money. Was
yeah,
the
I don't expect you to comment on this, but, you know, my problem with this, I caught this happening to my dad, is that, you know, you pay for these kind of insurances with a credit card, and they send you a letter that says your insurance is due for renewal, you don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
So my dad go, right, that's fine then. And then all of I'm going, hold on a minute, how much did you... You've only been in your car twice, and you paid 800 quid for your insurance. My Porsche doesn't cost that much. And each year, he'd just been auto-renewing without ever looking at the price.
Yeah.
Again, very much under the FCA spotlight now.
Yeah. But I guess that's why they were doing it, because a number of people would just renew, and the ones that looked and said, I'm not doing that, were smaller than the amount of people that renewed. But as you say, the FCA have kind of taken that on board now.
Very much, and quite right too.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you do about your car insurance? He Googles it.
Do you know what? I think it was confused.com, actually.
Was it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. But the funny thing is about, you know, Money Supermarket, confused.com and all the others, a lot of those, because you get 50 quotes or whatever, and they rank them, a lot of those providers are actually insurance brokers.
Right.
It's quite interesting. But then what you need to do is look at the small print and find out who the capacity providers are.
Yeah.
Because you do find that some of them are offshore and unrated. Yeah. So you've got to look at the small print with those.
Absolutely. Things. You know, and even the upfront, a lot of them are going, I've never even heard of this lot, over this lot. You know, I'm not, you know, they're dirt cheap. You know, it's 50 quid instead of 200. And you think, yeah, interesting stuff. So all the kind of things, all the kind of configurations you put together for people, you were explaining to me off air as well, which fascinated me, about some of the bigger deals that you do for large amounts of money that you have to work around. The way I would put it is you have to pull in a number of people to provide the insurance or the reinsurance.
That's
to
right, yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Just give us an overview of how that works.
Yeah, so it could be where there's a particular project that has to have a certain level of insurance, and it could be an eye-watering limit, so over 100 million, for example, for public liability. So in that example, what you would tend to do is to find a lead insurer, a lead insurer who's prepared to take on, say, I don't know, for argument's sake, the first 20 or 30 million.
Yeah.
And then you find follow insurers until basically you filled up the book and then you've got the full 100 million or whatever it is, the amount. But you, the lead insurer is the key. Once you get that sort of cornerstone in place, then it is easier to...
And as a broker, is it your job to find all those people and put them together as a package?
We can do. However, if it's something that's more suitable to Lloyd's as a market, then you have to go through an accredited Lloyd's broker. There aren't that many of them compared to general insurance brokers, of which we are. But again, it's exactly the same as having great relationships with insurance companies. You've got to have a great relationship with your Lloyd's broker as well for things just like that, for that you've just talked about, that example.
Mm. Cool. Simon, as always, it's fascinating talking to you. And, you know, a lot of us think that insurance is a dry subject, but you bring it to life and you make it relevant. So thank you for that. Just give people a shout out for your website so that if they want to come and talk to you, which you do, I'm just telling you, you do need to talk to Simon. Give us a shout for your website so they can find you.
That's very kind. Thanks. It's www.morpheusinsurance.co.uk. And we didn't even talk about cyber insurance, did we?
We didn't, no. And we should do, really.
Yeah, just give us a quick tip on it.
Well, very interesting market now. So take-up was very slow. It's been available for over 20 years. Take-up was very slow. Then all of a sudden...
Over 20 years,
yeah,
really?
Yeah, I know. People don't realise.
Wow.
But anyhow, so pandemic, that focused people's attention. Employees moving out of offices, working from home. Employer has less control over what that employee does sitting in front of the computer for IT security, that sort of thing. So the take-up increased massively, which is great.
Yeah.
Now the claims have come through. So what we're finding now is that a lot of the insurers are ramping rates, reducing cover, increasing excesses, etc. So it's an interesting market at the moment. I would say if you're thinking about buying it, it's probably best to buy now rather than wait, because the cover is only going to go one way. I can't see it widening much more. But what you're also finding, though, is that insurance companies are now becoming more proactive in terms of helping clients up front in order to avoid having a claim, because obviously it's in their interest.
What kind of claims are coming through, Simon?
So it would be things like ransomware attacks, phishing, social engineering. And again, there's always been this reluctance to buy the product, especially for firms who maybe they use external IT contractors or consultants. But really, it doesn't matter. You can have all the security in the world, but if somebody clicks on something they shouldn't...
Yeah. It's so easy to do, isn't it?
It certainly is, yeah. Cool. Simon, thank you for that. So check it out, www.morpheusinsurance.co.uk. There is a link on the Business Bunker Radio website, which will be there forever. So if you forget to write that down, just go to the website and it will be there and you can click through. For the moment, Simon, thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Paul. Great to see you.
Yeah, and you too. And we haven't got very long left, and we haven't really covered much in the way of any of the emails we've had in. So I want to try and catch up with some of those. Can't find my glasses.
Yeah, and we've got lots of tweets still coming through.
Yeah,
as well.
You can get some lined up. I'm going to tell you about this. Maidstone Council have been in touch. They've got an exciting start for businesses at Locate, LOC8. See what they did there?
Yeah.
A groundbreaking event has taken place to celebrate work starting at Locate, a £47 million new mixed-use business park on the Ashford Road at Junction 8 of the M20 near Maidstone. A ceremony took place this morning where the Mayor of Maidstone officially started the construction work on the project. All partners working on the project also attended. Maidstone Council, Locate in Kent, Clearbell and joint agents CBRE and Caxton's. The building work is now underway with plans for the new units to be completed and ready for businesses by summer 2022. The site will be suitable for both small and medium-sized businesses with room for more than 1,000 employees. Locate is designed to protect nature and enhance sustainability with the prominent use of local materials throughout the site. The landscape setting will have existing planting of native woodland and new ponds. So, there you go.
I love a pond.
Yeah.
Canterbury-based Farran Independent Financial Advisors have seen a significant increase in the number of people in the South East taking or planning for early retirement. That's you and me, Paul Andrews.
Yep.
With more expected to follow in the next couple of years. These findings are echoed from a recent Aviva survey, which reveals that a quarter of people plan to retire at 60. 6 years before the current state pension age, and one in five people plan to retire at 55. Farran has received more inquiries than ever before from residents in Kent and the South East looking to retire earlier, which it attributes to almost 2 years of working from home, lockdown and travel restrictions influencing life plans. The chartered firm has been offering independent financial advice in Kent for almost half a century and has just been recognised by the FT as the third best financial advisor in the UK and the top firm in the South East. So there we are. They're giving advice if you fancy retiring a little bit earlier, even at 55. We've missed our boat, Paul Andrews.
I missed the boat. I was fully intending to retire at 50, then 55, then 60, then 65.
Me too.
Ain't happening. It hasn't happened.
But what would we do?
Yeah.
What would you do if you retired? What's your plan for when you retire?
At the moment, at my age, I'd die probably.
You do get people that you need a hobby, don't you, Simon? Mm. If you do get people that stop work and then they pop off.
Yeah. Sausage production.
Yeah.
But I think if you've got lots of hobbies, it's fine, and crafts and things that you do. And I'm not the sort that would sit at home and do jigsaws.
Well, I'm not a golfer, so I wouldn't retire and play golf, but I could find plenty to do. That.
Yeah, you're good at football. You could do football training.
I'm nearly 70 years old. I'm not going to start playing football again.
You're not nearly 70. You're under. Yeah. Well, what else would you do? What hobbies would you do? Gardening? You've got a big garden to
do. I have. I would do a bit of gardening.
Boating?
I would swim a lot.
Yeah, there you go.
And stuff like that.
And yeah. chase squirrels.
Right, uninterrupted FSB news coming up.
Love. The Federation of Small Businesses News Roundup. Offering advice and guidance for small businesses and the self-employed.
As always on the show, I'm
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Sorry about that. As always on the show with the Federation News, I'm going to give you loads and loads of events. And then at the end, I'm going to give you a link to find out more and to book your places, which are all free. The Kent Women in Enterprise Virtual Networking is taking place on Thursday, the 10th of February, 9:30 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. There's a Negotiating Structuring Better Outcomes webinar on Tuesday the 15th of February at 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Is your business dementia friendly? A webinar taking place on Thursday the 24th of February, 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. There's Kent Virtual Networking, Wednesday the 23rd of February, 4 to 5 p.m. Join us for this Kent-based relaxed networking event with like-minded business owners. Everyone is welcome. This is going to be fun. Monday the 21st of February, 11 a.m. till 12 noon, Making Tax Digital. This interactive session will explore the support available from HMRC, Rhino and FSB to businesses and the self-employed with the upcoming Making Tax Digital rules to customers can submit their VAT returns directly. Highly boring, but very necessary. Maximise your membership, Monday the 28th of February, 12:30 to 1:30 p.m. Just on that, Making Tax Digital, the FSB has launched a Making Tax Digital app. We've partnered with Rhino Software, whose HMRC recognised app is designed to help you follow new Making Tax Digital rules, record your expenses, create invoices and submit your VAT return directly to HMRC in the app. If you want to find out about it, if you go to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/MTD-app, you can download the app there and find out all about what the app does. And I think that would make your life a lot easier. On Thursday the 10th of February, that's this Thursday, Building a Circular Economy. All businesses will be impacted by the need to become circular eventually, and it's expected that businesses that show leadership and innovation will make significant economic gains. So that's 10th of February, 10 a.m. You'll be interested in this, Simon. Commercial Insurance, Navigating Uncertainty for Small Businesses. A webinar taking place on Tuesday the 22nd of February at 11 a.m. Net Zero Conversation. Let's talk about the transition to electric vehicles for SMEs on Wednesday the 23rd of February, 11 a.m. to 12 noon. And then we're into March. Launch Your Own Business, Become a Membership Advisor with the FSB, a webinar on Thursday the 3rd of March at 10 a.m. There's International Women's Day, Breaking the Bias, on Tuesday the 8th of March at 10:30 a.m. There's the HI3 Network, Are You Innovation Ready? Networking and Discussion on Thursday the 10th of March at 11 a.m. There's a Property and Construction event, Health and Safety Responsibilities for Developers and Contractors, Thursday the 10th of March, 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. They always do the construction ones early in the morning. I hope they give out bacon sandwiches in these virtual things. And then at the end of March, What to Do If Running Your Business Feels Hard. Blimey. Wednesday the 3rd of March at 11 a.m. So all of those are coming up. If you want to find out more details about any of those webinars or to book your free place, if you go to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/FSB, you can find all the details there. Right, Jules.
Shepherd Neame is to brew a Thai lager Singer for the UK market. It expands on a distribution agreement it has with the Boon Rawd Brewery Company since 2019. Now the Faversham firm will also brew the popular Tipple in 330 millilitres and 630 millilitre bottles and kegs. Singer 330 millilitre cans will continue to be imported. They will distribute the UK-based brewed Singer to selected pubs in its 310 strong estate from London to the southeast and to on and off trade customers nationwide. It will continue to manage Singer's UK market strategy, sales distribution and promotion, all said with more homeopathic remedies under my tongue. Got a lot to fit in, Paul Andrews.
I know. And
I saw him yesterday.
And you're munching on tablets at the same time.
You can't munch them. You have to keep them under your tongue.
Ah, okay.
Got some SME news here. It's delighted to announce that the voting for the 6th Annual UK Enterprise Awards, ta-da, 2022, is now officially open. In the face of unprecedented hardship and uncertainty over the last 2 years, the UK business owners have demonstrated the most utmost dedication and innovation in the ways they have adapted to weather the COVID storm and ensure the survival of their businesses. So you can take part in these. Nominees could become one of the officially recognised award winners. It's a bit like the Brit Awards, you know, tonight, for a well-established UK awards programme. So how can you join, I hear you cry? Self-nominations are permitted, Paul Andrews. So you can go to www.sme-news.co.uk with a little slash awards. uk-enterprise-awards. And why not self-nominate you or a business that you know?
Fantastic. I've had a tweet from Athelbray. And they say, hi, Business Bunker team. Our February newsletter is out tomorrow. If anybody would like a copy, just email Kate at Athelbray. That's A-T-H-E-L-B-R-A-E. Kate at athelbray.co.uk. And we'll make sure you get it straight to the inbox. Many thanks. Enjoying your show. I get that on a regular basis, and it really is worth a read. It's a really enjoyable newsletter to get. So do sign up for that by dropping Kate an email. Apparently we're live now. Oh, no, that was you.
That was me.
Yeah.
Tunbridge Wells businesswomen are shortlisted for 9 county awards. Four of them, actually. They have there's multiple categories for 2022 Kent Women in Business Awards. There's Siobhan Sterling, Deborah Richards, Jess Gibson and Jessica Nelson. And they'll all be hoping to bring home titles at the prestigious regional ceremony, which will be held on Friday the 11th of March at the Ashford International Hotel. Of which I've partaken many a meal.
I've done quite a few Kent Women in Business Awards there as well.
Exactly. Mm. It will be the fifth year in a row that Siobhan Sterling, Director of Sharp Minds Communication, has made the final shortlist of the awards. Joining her at the March ceremony is Deborah Richards of Madison's Residential, also in the finest selection for Business Women of the Year. As well as Growth Award, which will be the leading Tunbridge Wells estate agent's first appearance at the formal Black Tie Gala. Last but not least, Jessica Nelson, owner of Once Upon a Wish Events, has been recognised as a finalist for both the Professional Achievement Award and Mumpreneur of the Year. So that's great. Well done, all the women who are in that and then nominated and accepted.
Fantastic. Tracy Ferguson was on, but mine, she was on a couple of hours ago, and I've just caught up with it. That just says she's listening live and enjoying the show. So thank you, Tracy. It's always a pleasure to have your support, and we really do appreciate it. Right. DG East, how about a shout out for a frustrated vehicle supplier losing the will to live, waiting for an electric vehicle to charge? I know the feeling, Terry. I know the feeling. Right. Discussions to... I'm really pleased about this, which is why I wanted to get it in, because I've been pushing for this for a while. Discussions to potentially install new nuclear technology on the Romney Marsh have begun. It comes 8 months after the announcement that the Dungeness B power plant will move into the defueling stage 7 years earlier than expected. They've already decommissioned A, of course. Although it will take many years for the site to be shut down completely, it will eventually lead to the loss of many jobs. Neighbouring site Dungeness A was decommissioned in 2006. MP for the Marsh, Damian Collins, has previously championed the idea of an SMR, that's a small modular reactor, on the land. He says due to existing grid connections, this would suit the location such as the Marsh. Unlike a traditional power station, SMRs, which are powered by nuclear energy to generate electricity, are constructed off-site and then just assembled on the site. And SMRs, in my humble opinion, are the future, and that's where we need to go if we're going to get anywhere near net zero, is for wide-scale electric production in the greenest way possible, which is nuclear, and SMRs are the way to do it. And in fact, Rolls-Royce have recently been awarded a contract to build the nuclear plants for SMRs.
Where is it going to
be?
Where's the nuclear plant going to be?
Hopefully putting one in Dungeness.
I always find them a bit scary and a bit spooky after Chernobyl and all that.
Give over.
Yeah, it was scary, wasn't it, that whole thing?
No, it wasn't. Not Is remotely scary. Do you know what the official death toll of Chernobyl actually was?
Well, I thought they were still dying from it.
Yeah, that's because that's what the press tell you. But do you know what the official United Nations death toll for the whole of Chernobyl
tell
was?
Tell me.
54.
Really?
Yeah.
What do you think, Simon? I find them a bit spooky, the old nuclear power.
I'm going to sit on the fence on this one.
Yeah, he's not going to get involved.
You can sit on the fence, but, you know, and Dungeness is a lovely place of extreme
beauty. There's three nuclear power stations there, A,
Already?
B and C.
So why are they going to do another one?
No, A has been decommissioned.
Okay.
B is in the process of being decommissioned, and C has already been served notice by the EU before we left to shut down. So the whole thing was due to shut down.
But even the naming of them is sinister, Simon. A, B and C.
Well, what should they call them? One, two and three.
Call them Fred, Deirdre and...
Fred, Dolly and George.
Something a bit more lovey-dovey.
The fact is that what they're proposing is to, on an existing nuclear site with connections to the grid, is to put an SMR. One of the things that we're going to roll out is SMRs all over the country, small modular reactors, because that's the future of nuclear.
See, he loves an SMR. He loves all these reactors.
Wait until I start telling you about tokamak reactors.
And what are they?
They're fusion reactors. The thing that everybody says is never going to happen. Yeah?
See how his eyes light up, Simon? Well, I mean,
he's
like Minnie Mouse on helium, isn't he?
Well, because we need energy. And what we've got at the moment in renewables is not sufficient to power what we need. If we're all going to drive electric vehicles, where are we going to get the electric from? From my personal opinion is we need nuclear now. And at least until we've got other renewables in a better frame.
By the way, did you see BP, how much money they made profit?
Yeah.
Did you hear on the news today?
Yeah,
did you hear that, Simon?
I didn't know.
I can't remember, but it was something astronomical.
Well, they make something like $27 billion a quarter.
Yeah. And I also saw something on Twitter. I need to look later, but something about the government were asking people on smart meters to try and go.
Oh yeah.
What was that?
To limit their usage. You got to be bonkers to do this.
See, yeah. I've got a smart meter.
Uh oh.
Yeah. Can
Don't
I
tell anyone?
Can I ask to get rid of it?
No. Now you got it. You're tied in.
Really.
Yeah. Anyway,
have you got one, Simon? Because you're sensible.
I have, but where we live in a tiny village, there's no signal, so it doesn't actually pick up the signal.
Well, I actually, when they put it in, my kitchen, and I actually had to put it in the garage because it was freaking me out. Because you need to turn something on, it's going, wee, you know. So I've got it out of sight, out of mind.
Dodgy stuff. That's for another day. We're almost at the end of the show. Have you got anything you need to read quickly, very quickly?
I've read all mine diligently.
Have you? I've got loads left, but we haven't got time to read them all.
Yeah, but you have put the wind up me now. Smart meters. It's been one of those shows, hasn't it, with smart meters and, whatever they called, those horrible things in Dungeness that you just...
They're not horrible. SMRs are brilliant. They're fantastic. I'll tell you about...
Do you want one in Tenterden?
Yes, absolutely. I want one in my garden. I actually Googled to see if I could build my own. Yeah.
Well, you've got that estate being built next to you, haven't you?
So. Don't even go there. Don't even go there.
How long have we got?
Don't even go there. I'm in a fight with them at the moment.
Tune in next week, Business Bunker listeners.
Anyway, yes, nuclear's the future as far as I'm concerned. There you go. Right, we've reached the end of another show. I want to say a huge thank you to the lovely folks at Tenterden Chamber of Commerce for sponsoring this week's show. To our guest Pam Locke of Locke Associates, employment law specialist and health and wellbeing consultants. To the fantastic Mr. Simon Hammond of Morpheus Insurance Brokers. Thank you all so much. To my stonkingly gorgeous co-host Jill Serkin. We'll be back with another show next week. Bye for now.
Bye bye.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
This is Channel 2.